Hello, everybody. This is Charles with the Barbershop Group Podcast, and today we're going to talk about an issue that I know a lot of you guys out there, you probably talked to friends about it, you've probably done a little bit of research about it, and even if you haven't talked about it, it's at least come across your desk or it's been on your iPhone or your Android device, and that topic is suicide, and particularly we're talking about male suicide. And with good reason, we're talking about male suicide today. As you guys know, not so long ago, the entertainment world lost a number of people to suicide, but a lot of people were focused on Anthony Bourdain, a successful Italian-American foodie who traveled all around the world, letting us into his world of food and strange places and wonderful people and everything else. And I'm sure that there are a lot of guys out there who would love to do what Anthony Bourdain did. I know for me, while I would enjoy the traveling, I would not like to put any strange food in my stomach. Just can't do it. But, you know, guys, one of the things that I noticed that happened after the untimely passing of Anthony Bourdain was a lot of people became uber conscious about suicide. And that tends to follow a trend. You know, a lot of times when we have a celebrity die by suicide, everybody's senses are heightened. Everybody's talking about it. It's all over the news. It rocks us. It surprises us. It shocks us. But then, interestingly enough, we begin to forget. The news stops talking about it. We stop talking about it at work. We stop talking about it with family and friends. We stop talking about it with people that we know that may be struggling. And, you know, here's the other thing about it. We also go into hiding if we thought about those kinds of things for ourselves. All right. So today, we're going to talk about it. Today, I have on the show Dr. Heather Stevenson. Dr. Stevenson, are you there? Hello, Dr. Stevenson. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I can hear you. Okay. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us on the show today as we discuss Man Down, you know, confronting male suicide on the American home front, because this is an issue. And this is an issue, Dr. Stevenson, that you are passionate about. This is an issue that you have helped a lot of people with, and you continue to help a lot of people with. And so we thank you for taking some time to spend, you know, and really delve into this topic. I know it's a difficult topic. It's difficult for me. You know, yeah. Dr. Stevenson, you know, as you were listening, we were talking about Anthony Bourdain and you know, just kind of what the media does when someone of that status dies by suicide. But I can tell you, Dr. Stevenson, I have a good friend who lost a brother at a young age to suicide at a time when we didn't think that people were doing that. And we definitely didn't think that African-American men were doing that, right? So this thing of suicide, it's not just about celebrities. It's not about the people who have it all together. It's touching everybody today.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. And I just start and say thanks, you know, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate that you guys are talking about this over at the Barbershop Group, and it is such an important topic, and it is something we need to keep talking about. So I'm really happy to be here to be a part of that conversation with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Dr. Stevenson, you know, when we talk about death by suicide, it seems as though this has been a longstanding problem for white American males. Is that really the way it is, or is just the way the media is portraying it?
Well, it's certainly the way that the statistics have shown for a lot of years, is that generally leading the top of the chart, so to speak, in the category of most completed suicides is middle-aged white American men. And, you know, I think there are many reasons for that, but I also think that that's what gets reported the most, and that's not necessarily representative of who's struggling with thoughts of suicide the most, because as you say, it's a problem that affects everyone, and it affects people of all ages and races and genders and socioeconomic status across the board.
Yeah, so, you know, sticking with white American males for a moment, though, Dr. Stevenson, I have some information. From one of our partners, Healthy Men Michigan. And one of the things that they were able to convey to us at the barbershop group was that, you know, they were doing some surveys, and they were getting a lot of working white males who were somewhere along the suicide ideation spectrum. And prior to them taking the survey and sitting down and talking to people, these guys had no idea that, you know, they were having some of the same ruminations and thoughts as individuals who who had died by suicide. So what's going on in the male mind where these really, really deep psychological things are happening, and we're not waking up to it until it's too late? What's going on in the mind there?
Yeah, well, that's such a great question. I think, you know, the biggest issue for me is that we see that men are struggling with these issues because we do see these very public losses and these deaths and suicides, and yet, like you said, they fade away and we stop talking about it. And that's been the issue that I think has been the problem for the longest amount of time, is that we don't talk about it enough, and we particularly don't talk about men's mental health and men's struggle and men's depression, and haven't been giving the space and the platform and the ability to open up and talk about what's going on with them. So men in particular are being told over and over again to keep everything shut down inside, to not talk about their feelings and their emotions. And they can still struggle with some of these things, but aren't opening up and sharing it with anyone until maybe they're directly asked or confronted about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting that you say that, because I remember reading a book. I remember reading a book years ago by a Harvard professor. His name was Samuel Huntington. And Sam Huntington was a huge proponent of the what he labeled the white American Protestant work ethic. Okay, and a lot of people say, "Oh, that was a load of crap. Sam Huntington was a racist, or he was very conservative," and you know, everybody's got labels for everybody. But I thought the book was interesting, in a sense that here you have an older white male who was saying that American society is falling apart in part because we are losing the white American Protestant work ethic. At the same time, this white American Protestant work ethic that he referenced seems to be causing some trouble for that particular group of men, especially, you know, in my field of addiction. When they come into the office, they're talking about being extremely unhappy with work and not wanting to work 60, 70 hours and not wanting to be a doer, but wanting to live life more fully and what have you, or having had to stuff emotions for the majority of their lives. And so it's very interesting to see the correlation there. A lot of people, again, when we're talking, you know, watching the news, they're not telling you about all of this stuff that's going on. They just give you these stats. They tell you somebody passed away. They pull on your heartstrings, but they don't get into the sociocultural aspects of it. All right. So, you know, I remember around when the market crashed, I guess maybe 2006, 2007, somewhere like that. I know that people were reporting more suicidal ideation as well as increased drug use. And that's part of the way in rural America, that's part of the way these increases in opioid addiction started to happen. There were so many people who were reporting dissatisfaction with jobs, or they had been hurt on jobs. They worked themselves down to the bone. And you had some addiction, you had some suicide, and a lot of it was white men. And just that's a very key thing. So one of the other things that I was thinking about, Dr. Stevenson, is this: when it comes to getting help, right? When it comes to men reaching out, it still feels like there are some major barriers there. And I don't know if it's socially constructed, if men are doing it to themselves, or if it's just been this invisible wall up that says, you know, you can't get help. Why does it seem like there's just this boogeyman in the room?
Yeah, I mean, I think really it's a societal issue. It's we as a people have said for so many years that men are not allowed to get help, that men are supposed to be the one that takes care of everything, that holds down the fort, that brings in the money, that takes care of the family, and that they need to be the ones to do kind of everything. And so much of men's identity ends up then being wrapped up around their career, their job, their work, because that's where their focus is, and that's what we've told them for decades and decades and decades. And so if something ever changes in their work situation, their career, God forbid they lose a job, the stress of that is what so often ends up triggering people towards depression and suicide, because now they don't know what to do. And they don't know how to provide. They don't know how to take care of everything. And we've never told them anything different. We've never said that it's okay for you to get some help. It's okay for you to talk to someone, and that you don't have to handle everything all on your own. And that's the biggest message I think we need to start changing in our society if we want to really see an improvement in the mental health of men and a decrease in those suicide rates.
Gotcha.
I see, you know, guys who have the hardest time just giving a call to a therapist or a counselor or anyone to try to get some help because they've just never been told it's okay to do that, and they really don't know how, and they struggle to open up and feel like that's safe to do. Vulnerability is one of those things that we don't teach men from an early age, and so it's, you know, become something that gets ingrained when you start as a boy, as a young man, as a child, and just continues to get reiterated over and over and over again.
Yes. And to be clear, this messaging, it not only comes from men and families, but it also came from women and families as well.
Yeah.
And that's I think that's a little jagged pill that's hard for a lot of folks to swallow. It's like, well, wait a minute, I thought that mom was always a nurturing person, but somehow the way that we have raised girls, we've not raised boys, especially when it comes to emotional intellect, right? So I think there's a lot to be said for that. You know, guys, you are listening to Dr. Heather Stevenson with us today. And Dr. Stevenson has worked with countless men, both individually and in groups, in the general public, as well as prisons, around the issues of masculinity, gender norms and stereotypes, disconnection in relationships, stress management, burnout, anger management, and a myriad of other mental health issues such as depression, anxiety, and PTSD. So, Dr. Stevenson, you know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is this. We know that the rates of suicide for men are high. We know this. But when we look at the statistics, we also see that over 50% of these suicides are committed with firearms. Okay.
Right. Yep. Men are more likely to be engaging in violent forms of aggression and acting out in suicide, much more so than women. And so I think that's also important to point out, is that, you know, when they do end their own life, they do it very violently and in a much more public way a lot of the time than women do.
Right. And I know that the folks who really love the Second Amendment, right, I know that they'll just go, oh, gosh, here we go. But I mean, let's consider this for a moment. At over 50% of the suicides, including firearms, those make for high success rates. You know, they really
right.
do. They make and so here we have an issue. We have a little bit of a quagmire, Dr. Stevenson, because we want to address men and suicide. At the same time, we want to love our guns as well, mm-hmm. right? And
sure.
so it's
yeah.
like, how do you know, it, again, it's the elephant in the room. How can we truly mm-hmm. address issues of men and suicide if we're not going to address issues of violence in America? How is it even possible?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Such a great point and such a good question. And I don't think that it is possible to only talk about one side of that. I think both are so intertwined, and it's such an important issue that really it raises questions on all sides of the fact. And if you think about who's being marketed to for gun sales, who's being targeted for guns, who's not just in, you know, going down to your local shop and buying one, but in video games and media online.
Yes.
Those kinds of messages are all coming towards men much more so than they are to women. And
right.
we're teaching young men and boys from an early age that violence is okay, that violence is acceptable. That's one of the only emotions and ways they can express emotion that is acceptable. Mm-hmm. And so then it just becomes the easiest thing to go to when they're having a hard time and they're struggling and they're feeling this depression and this sense of
right.
like hopelessness. They don't know what else to do. And so what do they end up turning to? And that's what we keep seeing
right.
played out over and over and over again.
Right. Absolutely. And just to be clear, you know, for the people who are listening who may say, uh-oh, we've never heard this kind of political jargon on the barbershop group before. I mean, the statistics speak for themselves. You're talking about 51% mm-hmm. of suicides committed, you know, using guns. And then mm-hmm. the smaller percentages, a lot of people would think that maybe poison would be next on the list, but poison is actually not next on the list. Suffocation is next on the list, is the highest after mm-hmm. gun use and committing suicide. So not mm-hmm. even poison, you see. If guns are violent, then what men do afterward is they don't go to something that's, you know, significantly less violent. They go to something that's just slightly less violent and hanging and suffocation.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Right.
So I think there's something to be said also, not only about addressing men and depression and anger, but also we've got to have a conversation with men about violent tendencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you say that this is maybe not a common topic for, you know, your listeners and for the barbershop group, but I think even broader than that, it's not a common topic for most people. And that's the issue mm-hmm. is that we're not talking about any of it until
right.
really kind of it started to come up more so in the last couple of years. But even then, it's on such a small scale, and the conversations just kind of fade away so quickly, in part because I think a lot of people feel scared to talk about these issues. They don't know how to talk about these issues. And there's mm-hmm. always this thought in a lot of people's, you know, the back of their head saying, well, if I talk about suicide, is it just going to make someone be suicidal, or is it going to make me feel more suicidal? And so we shy away from it because we don't want to
right.
make the issue worse, which is
right,
honestly
right.
the worst thing we could do, because
yeah.
then we don't give the space for it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So you're talking about that copycat, the argument that someone will copycat it if we talk about it. And
right.
and that's
yeah.
definitely, yes. I've heard that said many times. That, you know, if we talk about this, then that'll make someone else want to do it. And that's not exactly how it works when it comes to
mm-hmm.
suicide and suicide ideation. This, you know, it's a little different
right.
here. All right.
Right.
It's not like a guy going out and saying, hey, I got away with stealing a car. You should try that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, all right. Yeah,
yeah.
No, it's a little different. A little different. So, you know, I guess when I hear you speak about suicide, I'm thinking about warning signs, Dr. Stevenson, and,
mm-hmm.
and what are some of the warning signs that we may need to start talking about or looking for?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I really think it's so important because a lot of the time, the way depression presents itself, the way it looks, is very different between men and women. And most people don't necessarily know that or recognize that. And for men, a lot of the signs can be things like engaging in more risky behavior or using more drugs or alcohol, trying to mask their pain and their hurt by doing things that are excessively acting out. We don't necessarily see guys as much withdrawing and kind of going in, but we see them doing more to project in other ways what's going on with them as a way to take the eyes sort of off of their internal struggle and put it on something else outside of them.
Got you. Go ahead.
So I'm just wondering, I mean, you've worked with guys in addiction before, and so I'm sure you've come across this, that addiction usually is a mask for something else, right? And so I'm sure you've had guys come and talk to you about what's really going on and how when they're struggling and having a hard time, the easiest thing sometimes to do is just go and turn towards another substance, turn towards a drink or turn towards something else to kind of help mask that. So if we start to see someone maybe using more or, again, like engaging in other risky behaviors, having sex with multiple partners or more sort of low-level crime or doing things that are kind of high risk, then those are some things to kind of be on the lookout and say, what's really going on there? What else might be happening that I can check in with someone about?
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you mentioned having sex with multiple partners, Dr. Stevenson, because I have, over the years, I have taken some major flack and heat from guys when I say, hey, look, you know what? And from women, too, when I say things like, you know, I'm not so sure if the guy's just a dog. I'm not so sure if he's just a player. I think that there might be something else going on there. Okay. Because you know, we don't typically tend to think of having multiple partners as dangerous, right? As risky behavior. We think of it as like, hey, he's a stud, you know, but it's like, hey, no, there's a reason
for that.
Yeah. And when you start talking to guys, when you really get guys to open up, then you start learning that, you know, it really wasn't about being a stud, that they were acting out because other things were going on in life. And maybe they were just, they were checked out. They couldn't connect to those things until they got into therapy or they hit rock bottom or what have you. So that's something that, like I said, I'm glad to hear you say that, because a lot of guys don't even think about it that way. You know,
they don't. And that's, again, that's one of the, I think one of the issues is that we set them up to say, you know, as a society, we've said like, oh, it's not a bad thing for men to be promiscuous and have multiple partners. And a lot of the times when people are doing those kinds of behaviors, again, it's to avoid something else they're really feeling. And so we've almost given them permission even more so to avoid their feelings by kind of saying, it's okay to go ahead and do that. And other men will applaud you for having more partners than the next guy or for getting another notch in your belt. And it really then even more so leads to that isolation and that feeling of, I don't, you know, I have no one else to talk to. There's nothing else that I can do. So let me just keep doing these behaviors and try to cover it up that way.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we're running short on time, and we will continue this conversation because it's a long conversation and it's a great topic. It's something that we need to talk a lot about. And I know it's something you spend a lot of time dealing with, but I want to shift focus a little bit. I want to shift focus a little bit to the growing number of minorities that are dying by suicide. You know, I would say probably about 3 weeks ago or somewhere like that, Craig Turner, who was the son of Tina Turner, he died by suicide. And this was one of those, ironically, this was one of those individuals who, he's the son of a celebrity, And unless you were really, really in the know, you were unaware that this even took place. And on a lot of websites that cover African-American news and things like that, they didn't even talk about it at all. And, you know, I was like, wow, that's interesting. Well, he didn't make a record on his own, but he's the son of Tina Turner. And we missed that. How do we miss that? And then beyond that, a lot of people aren't realizing that African-American children, that suicide among African-American children is starting to increase here in the United States. What's your take on that? What do you think is causing that increase?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, again, part of the issue is that, especially with our kids and with our youth, we're not giving them opportunities to get help and to talk about their emotions. And in particularly for minorities, is that they're even more, they're struggling more with so many issues that a lot of their counterparts, their white counterparts, aren't having to face, and they're doing it alone. Mm-hmm. And we're telling them in particular, it's not okay for you to talk about this. And they honestly end up like they have no other choice. There's no other outlet. Yeah. They don't know what to do. They've tend to, you know, sometimes have more easier access to weapons or to means. And it just becomes that point of desperation where it just seems like the best option possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, you said they're dealing with some things that sometimes their white counterparts are not dealing with. And I'll just name it. You know, when we talk about racial injustice and whether it's actual racial injustice or perceived racial injustice, you know, we're talking about poverty, disenfranchisement and things like this. You're talking about growing up in extremely traumatic environments, right, that are both, you know, ontological, historically ontological, and also, you know, so you've got bad choices being made, but you also have bad choices being made as a result of outside pressure put on people in these communities. So a lot of young people are seeing these things. And I just wanted to make sure that our listeners, you know, understood exactly what you meant when you said, hey, you know, maybe they're dealing with some things that sometimes our white, you know, sometimes white counterparts are not dealing with. And it can make things extremely, extremely difficult for them. I know that a friend of mine told me some months ago that a young man at a high school attempted suicide right there, you know, during school hours. And he was a Hispanic youth. And it's just like, wow, this is increasing so much. What are the children seeing? What are these young people seeing that's giving them this sense of despair? So definitely want to get your take on that, because I think that before long, a lot of people, as we, you know, make this conversation about mental illness and mental well-being more normalized, we're going to hear more stories like this.
You know? Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think about a lot about the work that I did in prison. I spent several years working in maximum security prison, and it's pretty clear to most people to see the disenfranchisement of who's being incarcerated more, and minority males are being incarcerated at much higher rates than anyone else. And the commentary that I would hear so often is, you know, growing up, the things that you think are going to happen to you by a certain age is death or prison, and that's it.
Right.
And when your options become so limited, and that's what you've got to potentially look forward to, regardless of it being, you know, a true fact, is, well, if that's my two options, then what does it even matter if I just end my life now? If you're going through a hard time, then I might as well do it on my terms rather than being killed in the streets or being locked up for life.
Right.
So I think it's important that we also acknowledge what the realities are that these kids are having to face, that, again, other people don't always have to face that. And that's something that we also need to be shedding a light on and doing some work around, right? Is how do we help these kids more and get them connected to resources and to community outreach and things that can help show them that there are other options, there are other things that can be an outcome for their lives.
Right. Yeah, and just so you guys who are listening know, you know, we aren't talking about something that's abstract. The University of California, UCLA, right, they published a study talking about how poverty increased the chances of suicide, even beyond uncommitted things like foreclosures and addiction. Now, they're saying that poverty is something that contributes to suicide. And also, within the UK, they just ended up a series of studies talking about the impact of poverty on suicide within disenfranchised communities within the UK. And I'm sure that pretty soon you're going to have more and more of that come up here in the United States as well. So again, these aren't abstract thoughts, guys. These are real things that are going on. And we're just talking about huge levels of despair,
right,
where people feel like giving up. And Doc, before I let you go, sometimes I share with people a bit of my own story, and so you are included in it today. You know, back when I was probably about 15 or 16 years old, I was diagnosed with depression, and I experienced these thoughts of wanting to end my life. You know, and one of the things that I remember clearly was feeling like everything was against me, that mm-hmm. there was no way out, that nothing was going to change. I felt like giving up. It was like Wi-Fi, just lay down and die. Okay, just lay down and die. And I remember walking around and always just being in my head, you know, just not talking to anyone else. It was a million conversations, and they were all taking place only in my head. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I talk a little bit about that in the book that I am finishing up for men, because I want men to have an understanding of what it looks like, of what it feels like. I think that people kind of beeline or have some misconceptions about suicide and suicide ideation and stuff like that. So, you know, I put that out there, and thankfully I had a school counselor who was able to chime in. She was able to check in and see that something just wasn't quite right with me. And who knows what would have happened if I had not had that person around. And it mm-hmm. took some time to really kind of see what was going on. But, you know, I share that with you guys, and I share that with you, Dr. Stevenson, because I think that it's very important that we have real men, okay, who aren't celebrities, who can speak to these issues, who are not afraid to talk about them openly, you see.
Right.
And
absolutely.
Yeah, so we really do thank you for the work that you are doing with men, because I think that it's really important that guys understand that, you know, they're not out there alone. All too often, you know, sometimes we deal with guys who think that the world's out to get them, that women are out to get them, and they think that psychology and counseling is for women. You know, and everything. And that's just not true. That's not true. There are people out there
right.
who genuinely want to help us get better. So, Dr. Stevenson, if someone wanted to reach out to you, I know you're there in New York City. How could they reach you?
Right. Yeah. Well, the best way to reach me is just to go through my website, which is www.drheatherstevenson.com, and you can send me an email through the site. You can look me up on Instagram. It's the same handle, Dr. Heather Stevenson. And I just want to say I so appreciate you sharing your story and your experience, because you're 100% right in that we just need more people to share what they've gone through and their experience, and to let that be known to other people. It's okay to talk about it. It's okay to share. And you're not alone going through this. And as long as one person keeps sharing the message, someone else will keep sharing their message, and someone else will share their story. And I think that's one of the biggest things we need, in particular for men, to feel more comfortable opening up and sharing
Absolutely.
Themselves.
Absolutely. I agree. I totally agree. So, guys, you have heard Dr. Stevenson speaking about suicide with us today, and we will continue to have this conversation as part of our Man Down series, where we confront the elephant in the room and talk about male suicide. And we'll talk about it in a way that a lot of individuals do not. But we thank you for joining us today, guys. If you like what you heard, you can go over to www.patreon.com/thebarbershopgroup and make a contribution today. We have a lot of neat things coming down the pipe. We have a web show that's coming up really soon. And we'll also have a weekly live radio show where we'll have a psychologist on call to take some of your questions live during the week. So any of your contributions help us out a great deal. Also, look for some information from us regarding our new partnership with Healthy Men Michigan. They're doing some wonderful surveys for guys, for men, and they've got some really neat tools and resources out there for you all. So stay aware, stay attuned. All of those things are coming out really, really soon. You know, we just hope that what we're doing is benefiting you all. So, again, Dr. Stevenson, thank you very much for coming in. And, guys, you all have a good day. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Charles. Have a good one.